from the great state of Washington, State Senator Bob Hasegawa, is a lifelong resident of Beacon Hill in Seattle. He is a longtime labor and social justice activist. I almost said advocate. Activist. He has led many worker struggles, winning top wages and benefits for working families and retirees. He's collaborated in many social justice struggles to protect civil rights, democracy, the environment, and our constitutional rights since he began representing the 11th Legislative District in 2005. Bob's priorities have centered around serving as a voice for working families, small businesses, and disenfranchised communities. Welcome to the program, sir. It's a delight to have you here tonight.
John, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you know all about the, I hate to just come right out of the chute with this, but you are intimately familiar with what indefinite detention can mean to people, and I'm not sure that it's anything more than just a sort of a vapor of a possibility for many. So many of our citizens are jaded on all of this conspiracy talk with quotes around it, if you will, that, oh, the government would never do this to us. But they do it, don't they?
Oh, yeah, my life is a testimony to that. You know, it's more than a vapor of a possibility. And maybe I should talk a little bit about my story, because during World War II, after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, a panic, you know, engulfed the country, and President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066 that incarcerated or interned all Americans of Japanese descent. So my parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, everybody was put into a concentration camp for over 3 years. During World War II.
And how did that come about, Senator? Did it did the army trucks roll up and that's it? The guys get out with their rifles, come knock on the door and go, "You're coming with us, just what you can carry, you can come." I mean, what happened?
Absolutely. That's pretty much how it happened. The first evacuees were from Washington State over here, a little community called Bainbridge Island, just across Puget Sound from Seattle. And in fact, there's a memorial over there now to commemorate that incident. But, yeah, they were rounded up by the Army with rifles in hand. They spent the first few months, half a year or so, at the Puyallup Fairgrounds, living in horse stables until they could complete the construction for the concentration camp. But then as soon as that was done, and nobody knew what was going on, they just knew that they were being held, and then they were all loaded onto this train, having no idea where they were going. And ended up in the middle of nowhere in southern Idaho at this facility where they stayed for over 3 years.
And what happened to their property and so forth?
Oh, you were only allowed to take what you could carry. So everybody had to leave everything behind. I know property taxes weren't paid, so properties were put on the auction block. And, you know, there was good people at that time, though, too, who were willing to stand up against the injustice. So the Bainbridge newspaper was one of the very few on the whole West Coast that actually editorialized against this. It's similar to how we're fighting against the NDAA indefinite detentions right now. I noticed that you're having a state representative from Colorado on after me. Colorado was one of those states. They had a governor back then named Ralph Carr, who took a bold stand as governor to defend the rights of Americans, regardless of your race. And he did pay the ultimate political price for that. But there are people of courage all over willing to stand up. And if we don't have those voices, you know, our freedoms are always under attack, and we have to speak out to defend it. There was most of the Japanese Americans were trying to be good Americans, so they calmly, much, you know, you saw the tsunamis in Japan just a couple of years ago, or last year, and you know how orderly everybody was, even in Japan. Now that's sort of the culture. Well, that was sort of how it was back then too. Everything was very orderly, but you still had a dissenting rank in there, too. And many of them spoke out against that unconstitutional action, and they ended up being sequestered into different concentration camps from the, so they wouldn't, I guess, poison the mentality of the rest of the Japanese Americans.
Sure.
They were ultimately vindicated, and later, well, the Supreme Court at that time said it was okay. It was justifiable. Later on, though, decades later, they were vindicated through the Supreme Court decision, and ultimately, there was a bill passed, the Civil Liberties Act of 1986, I believe it was, that actually apologized for the incident, saying that we have to learn from history and never let it happen again. But unfortunately, you know, here we are, a few decades later, and it's happening again.
You know, let me just, I don't want to take, I want to hear you do most of the talking tonight, but let me just toss in this. There's an expression we've heard once or twice called go for broke. The 442nd Regimental Combat Team of the United States Army was a regimental size fighting unit composed almost entirely of American soldiers of Japanese descent who volunteered to fight in World War II, even though their families were subject to internment. The 442nd, beginning in 1944, fought primarily in Europe during World War II, was a self-sufficient force, fought with uncommon distinction in Italy, southern France, and Germany. The 442nd is considered to be the most decorated infantry regiment in the history of the United States Army, awarded 8 presidential unit citations, and 21 of its members were awarded the Medal of Honor for World War II. The 442nd Regiment Combat Team motto was, go for broke. Just saying.
They that was the ultimate act of courage and patriotism, actually, because in order to prove their patriotism, they volunteered from behind the barbed wire camps. You know, they were guarded. There's these guard towers with machine guns up there and whatnot. They volunteered to enlist and help win the war against fascism. And so they were enlisted, or they volunteered into the segregated unit called the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. And the stories that you hear about their skirmishes, there were more than skirmishes. I mean, there's a famous story of the Lost Battalion. I remember when I was growing up, my dad told me that, you know, there's a lot of people in this country who really don't like us, but if you go to this one town in Texas, they will love you and welcome you with open arms. And the reason that was because most of the kids who were in this Lost Battalion was from this one town in Texas. So this Lost Battalion was in the European theater up in northern Italy, and they had gotten surrounded by the German army, and they were written off as a lost cause. So the U.S. Army sent the 442 in, and it was considered a suicide mission, but they went anyway, and they fought in their way to the Lost Battalion and rescued them. But they had more casualties than there were even in the Lost Battalion in making that rescue. I mean, there's war stories that movies ought to be made of. There's this one story about them breaking the Maginot Line, where there was this impenetrable fortress at the top of a sheer cliff. And it was thought that if they could get to that fortress, but they could break through the line, but it was considered impenetrable. So they, in the middle of the night, scaled this sheer cliff in full combat gear. And before making the assault, they had a pact that said, if you fall, you cannot scream. You'll give away the position. And a couple of them did fall to their death, but they didn't scream, and they made it all the way up the sheer cliff and, in fact, took that fortress. So, I mean, there's just amazing stories about the courage and heroism, but they were fighting for America. And it's amazing that they had to. They didn't necessarily feel like they had to prove themselves, but, you know, they were fighting for the community, the Japanese Americans here back home who are behind barbed wire, to show that if we are Americans, then why should we be considered anything less?
I'll tell you, that is enough to absolutely coax a tear out of your eye. I mean, that you talk about content of character.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
A little funny story is when these guys came back to the U.S., I was a baby boomer. I grew up, and these guys happened to be my Boy Scout leaders, and so they trained us. We were pretty hardcore.
I'll bet. I'll bet. Very capable. Well, you know what? When you get an interesting man like yourself on the program, the time just zips by, and we're going to have to take a break here in a second.
Oh, but goodness. Yeah, it does zip by.
It's just ridiculous. We may go a little bit past the top of the hour because perhaps when you hear the music come up, we'll just find a stopping point. But tell the American people how grave is the threat that NDAA might remain part of our culture now. I mean, are you finding enough support among legislators and so forth to defeat this?
You know, there's a real fear in the country right now that's overwhelming. So the culture is shifting in the country, and we're being consumed by that fear. And we have to figure out some way that we can pull our country back together again to stand up for the values that we're founded under. So I'm always optimistic about that happening, but at the time being, I couldn't even get a hearing on my bill in the Judiciary Committee, which it was assigned to, which is actually chaired by a Republican.
All right, I'll tell you what, let's just hold up right here. We have to do it. It's our network break. Thank you. They came out in the right order that time. State Senator Bob Hasegawa from the great state of Washington. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you very much. Speaking with Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa tonight, and that little piece from Bruce Springsteen there pretty much says it all. The glory of combat, the glory of victory is being supplanted by a bunch of sneaky devils who go around subverting the Constitution. By the way, these comments that I make are not necessarily representative of the views and opinions of Premier Radio Networks, nor the affiliate station you may be listening to this broadcast over, however. Going back to Philip Marshall just for a second. Really? Well, you think we're just going to accept the official story? Well, we're not. There seem to be some elements in this society that are trying to push us into a state of revolution. And that's fine. But you know, security is a thing that you have that no one knows you have, and you may find out a little bit too late that people within your very own agencies are watching you. So you just remember this. You go ahead and push this country into a revolution. And just remember that when we come for you, you wanted it. We'll be right back with the senator in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. Delighted to have Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa with us tonight. Senator, you know, the people out here are saying, our legislators, well, why don't they do something? And we know very little of your world. So just give us a 6-hour political science course in about 20 minutes and just kind of tell us what you're going through and eventually roll it into what can we as citizens do to stop this NDAA, because it's poison. It's a complete violation of, well, posse comitatus to start with.
I believe in the power of people. And, you know, in government, there's basically two types of power. There's money and there's people. And the people will never be able to outspend the corporations. So we're going to have to rely on ourselves to get organized. And that's the project right there. It's a huge national organizing campaign. But there's so much working against us. You know, the media is constantly instilling this fear of our neighbors. You know, it's dividing us against ourselves, which only weakens our collective power. We need a cultural shift. And I think about the times back post-World War II. The guiding philosophy, principle in society was the golden rule. When's the last time you heard somebody talking about the golden rule?
Been a long time.
Anymore, it's like you're always looking over your shoulder. You're living in fear that your job might go away or get outsourced, or the bank's going to come and take your home away, and everybody's just feeling kind of helpless. And it's so unhealthy. We can't live happy, fulfilling lives when we're always living in fear and worried about tomorrow. So many things have to change, and the reason that we're feeling so helpless is because we're being divided against each other. The power of money is overwhelming the power of people in our political system. So we have to have that cultural shift back to what our parents taught us, and that golden rule philosophy of, you know, if you get the most out of the system, you're kind of morally obligated to put the most back into the system, and that's how they built the system for all of us. You know, I mean, they sacrificed tremendously to get us free education, and back in the day, free college even. They wanted a better life for their children. You know, we're in a place right now where our children are going to have it much tougher than we have it right now, and that is so scary as a parent. And
Bob, I know you got to be at work on Monday, and I don't expect you to come out on the clothesline with me, but the way that you talk is much different from what I hear from the so-called progressives, particularly in regard to what's being taught the children, beginning at the grade school level. You know, they're cognizant at about, you know, starting about third grade. But 3 through 6, it's like, don't talk about this. Don't do that. This is not acceptable. Oh, no, that's very unmutual. How do you reinstill what at one time we thought were traditional? And I say we thought because they've been so diluted. So I've been, you know, I've been victimized a little bit by this mentality myself. What we regard as traditional American values, how do we reinfuse the upcoming generations with this? Because it seems to me that currently, we're so far down the road, it would take a massive shift in the paradigm to get people back on the patriotic, not meaning going out there with your rifle and whatever, but just adhering to those values that make for a good life for everyone.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier, not that I'm a subscriber necessarily to it, but the more that we see the divide happening between the 1% or the 0.1% and the 99.9% of us, the more that they are pushing this whole society towards a revolution. I don't know if people just have to get in to such a place where they feel like they have nothing left to lose before some reality starts hitting them, but you know, I guess that's the real question that 300 million Americans are trying to ask themselves right now. Is how are we going to get ourselves out of this mess? It's a systemic problem. It's more than just a cultural shift. We've lost our vision as a society, I think. You never hear, you know, one thing about President Obama when he first got elected was he created a vision for hope. And that's what mobilized, regardless of what you feel about him politically, he did instill that vision of hope, that vision for the Dr. King type of vision. But then there was the hope that we could actually achieve it, and that's what got him there. And then as soon as he gets in, you know, he reappoints people like Timothy Geithner and, you know, some of the same old crowd, and you're thinking, oh, my goodness. You know, after all of that, and it took a lot of the steam out of that collective vision that was starting to coalesce. And I think that in his second campaign, he started to rebuild that, but there's cynicism built into the system now that he has to overcome. You know, we've got the full political spectrum from, I wouldn't say there's any far left anymore. It's sort of left, but it moves. The whole political scale has shifted to the right. have to be able to rebuild this collective vision, because I believe everybody does believe in the American dream in their gut. And when you, if we can get back to that, maybe that's that kernel that will start pulling us all together. You know, I'm the prime sponsor of the House Companion Bill to mine. Representative Jason Overstreet actually was the one who first drafted this bill, and I'm doing a companion bill to his. But we have talked about this in the past, where he is very conservative. I'm very liberal. But, you know, it's like you go to the extremes and you reach around the globe and you're touching hands on the back again. We've been able to make that connection because we both have the same gut feeling about where America should be, what it's all about. And if we can start instilling that back into people, inspiring people that we can be better than just arguing neighbors and people wanting to throw punches before we talk things out. You know, our only hope is if we can pull together as a people, because money is always going to be trying to divide us.
Should we turn off the television?
That would be hard for me to do. I'm a Trekkie, so...
Well, you know, it just seems to me that the news media no longer reports the news. They issue propaganda. I mean, they've been obsessing for days over this South African murder. You know, before that, they were obsessing on the Carnival Cruise fiasco.
Yeah.
And the more important things just get pushed to the back. And I haven't heard any of the mainstream media mention anything about the NDAA, maybe ever.
No, it's not sexy.
Right.
Don't sell soap.
How can we support you? How can we as a people within range of the of this broadcast, what can they do?
Start talking to each other like family. Just talk about the issues. You know, if we're not even talking about the issues, if we can just talk civilly with each other so that we can, you know, critically analyze some of these problems that are facing us. I mean, it all starts with just being able to say hi and giving a smile. And then just start talking about issues. That's what we used to do as a country. You know, you'd have dinner table chats with your family, and then kids would go over to the neighbors, and they'd chat, and they'd learn from their parents, and their kids would learn from us. And, I mean, that's just how it worked. And everybody's scrambling so hard to make ends meet. You know, you've got everybody under the roof working three jobs just trying to make ends meet, and... we don't have time to do what humans do, to be social and learn from each other, you know, so that collectively we are more than the sum of our parts.
Yes. Well, it looks like there's been a... Everybody wanted the... I've made a reference to this several times. Everybody wanted a big awakening in 2012. In fact, I think many people are so frustrated, it would have been okay if it had turned out to be the end of the world, and we just... disappeared into some sort of a black hole. It's like, we're finally out of our misery because this is just way too tedious. But it appears to me that there is, in fact, a very subtle revolution in thinking and awareness and awakening that is actually happening now. Maybe the end of that Mayan calendar signified the beginning of a shift in thinking, because I understand your state and on the other side of the country, Virginia, are very close to just banning drones altogether.
Yeah, I signed on to that bill. It's it also, though, didn't get much play in the Senate. But it's a start.
And, so you just keep hitting that wall until it finally cracks.
That's the story of my life.
Hey, you feel like taking a call?
Sure.
Let's take a call from Diane. She's in Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara.
West of the Rockies, all the way to the beach.
Hey, hi guys.
Hey, how are you?
You know, I appreciate the sentiment of the whole civil rights things, but you know, a lot of it's used to divide people. And I like what he's saying about you know, the coming together and stuff. But I think this whole NDAA thing is a result of just so much divisiveness and you know, and suspicion and stuff. And And I mean, not born out of that. I wouldn't say that, but I'm just saying where you can get people to believe that somebody is deserving of you know, the whole whatever might lead up to it. And so anyway, I'm keep seeing more and more and more of these, you know, these groups and stuff, and more divided and more and federally funded even, which is crazy. But anyway, I just a thought I had.
Thanks,
that.
Diane. Appreciate you.
Okay.
Well, I think that's what you were saying, Bob.
More and more groups springing up, but getting more polarized.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not having good dialogues. You know, our education system, it all starts there. We learn how to, from kindergarten, what was that, art, link, letters, that everything we need to know we learned in kindergarten.
Really?
Our kids learning how to socialize in kindergarten to be able to talk and play together well. You grow up, you start learning how to analyze problems. You go into post-secondary, you start living life. You start thinking about how to critically analyze problems to come up with solutions, and that means looking at a vast array of options. We're losing our ability to critically analyze our problems, and that's the key failing of our educational system. So as our system gets more and more overburdened and underfunded, you know, they're already saying that our children is the first generation that's going to be less educated than we are. That is not just scary, but it's so tremendously sad. You know, we want better for our children, and education is the key, yet they're not getting it. They're not going to get it.
Well, and you combine that with these reports that the intelligence level of people in general is declining. And I saw a report recently that we eat 35 pounds of definitely dumbing down material guised as food every year.
Hey, wait a second. No, I'm living off of that stuff.
Well, you watch out for those GMOs and the fluoride and the chlorine, the aspartame.
That bill is moving, too. Well, it's not moving, actually. There's a bill on the books. But there is actually a Citizens Initiative petition that's in our state right now to the legislature, 522. It's a GMO labeling bill initiative. So the legislature has the ability to recommend it to the people or modify something different, in which case both options go to the people for a vote and a choice next election.
Senator Bob, I got to ask you this. And if you say, John Wells, that is the most indiscreet question I've ever heard in my life, and just and next thing we hear is click, I'll totally understand. But my dad told me many years ago, that the President of the United States, when Barack Obama was elected, I thought, you know, give him a shot. Let's see what happens. And I within a few months, I thought, that's that conversation I had with my dad when he said, as soon as the president is elected, he has a conversation with some people, and he's never the same. I just can't help but wonder who those people are. And I'm thinking that this GMO labeling thing, it all, I believe, can be traced back to the money.
Oh, absolutely. That's not an indiscreet question. I think that's pretty much common knowledge. Everybody's trying to shy away from that fact.
Well, the question was going to be, who are they that the president has the conversation with? That's the indiscreet part.
it would just be speculation on my part. But
understood.
You can kind of look around to see who he's surrounded himself with, and there's some very good people there, but there's some others that I have serious questions about. One thing, you know, when you talk about it's all about the money, I have a bill that I've been working on here, and Colorado, I think, has a bill similar to it, to create a state bank of Washington, a publicly owned bank, so that we don't have to rely on Wall Street anymore and export our tax dollars to make Wall Street rich. And it's modeled after the Bank of North Dakota. North Dakota is the only state in the country that has its own bank, and it was formed in 1919 because they wanted to build independent. independence from Wall Street. And they succeeded. So that bank has been hugely beneficial to the people of the state of North Dakota, which is a very conservative state. Yet you talk to their state leadership and, or any of the citizens of the state, and they'll just tell you what a wonderful thing it has been for the state because it allows them to finance their own development. They're using taxpayers' dollars for the benefit of the taxpayers in the state, not exporting it as profit to Wall Street.
Isn't that a novel concept? Actually help the people.
Yeah. It's great. And most civilized, developing, and industrialized countries have their own publicly owned banks, so that's how they can finance their internal development. It just leverages the power of the taxpayers' dollars for the benefit of the taxpayers. It's really a fascinating concept, you know. Who would have thunk?
I wish we had another couple of hours. I hope you will come back on the program. We would like to check in with you every once in a while just to find out how your quest in getting this NDAA nullified is coming along. And thank you very, very much for being with us tonight. Washington State Senator Bob Hasegawa.